HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 214, recorded live Thursday, May 6th, 2010. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Gary Schmidt about being active with type 1 diabetes.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and today I'm chatting with Gary Schmidt. Gary is a type 1 diabetic like myself, and he is also a incredibly fit individual. He's a triathlete, and I thought it would be interesting to have him on the show because I used to be fit and then became diabetic, and Gary is diabetic and is fit, and he must know something I don't know. So thanks so much, Gary, for coming on the show and helping me figure this out.
No problem, Scott. Thanks for having me.
So how long have you been diabetic?
I was diagnosed in December of 2002, so just a little over 7 years.
Okay. And how old were you when you were diagnosed?
28.
28. So give us the story a little bit, and remember that we've got a lot of international listeners, and we've got a lot of non-diabetics. So talk a little bit about when you were diagnosed and what you thought and the different kinds of diabetes and whether or not it was unusual for this to happen to you at 28.
Yeah, sure. So it was fall of 2002, and I had a lot of the same symptoms that a lot of other folks that get diagnosed with this have. I all of a sudden, I was thirsty all the time. I was really tired. I had to go to the bathroom all the time, had to urinate all the time, and my vision got really blurry. And I had always had really good vision, so this kind of bothered me a little bit. So I had all these kind of things, and then over the course of just a couple weeks, I'd lost about 20 pounds. And I'm 6'5", and I weigh about 200 pounds, so I dropped down to about 180 really, really fast. And I remember I was at work one day and went to the restroom at work and looked in the mirror, and I thought to myself, I'm dying. I really had no idea what was going on at all. So finally, made an appointment to go see my doctor. And at this point, my vision had started to kind of go back to normal. So I thought maybe things were going to be fine. Went and visited him. They did some tests. And then a few days later, was talking on the phone with the doctor's nurse. And then I'm trying to figure out what the diagnosis was. And she said, did the doctor say anything about diabetes? And I didn't know anything about diabetes at all. And I thought that was kind of a immediate death sentence. So I quickly did some research and learned that wasn't necessarily the case. I was initially diagnosed with type 2, which is something that happens a lot to adults that are diagnosed kind of later on in life with type 1. And I wasn't the typical kind of person that would have type 2, the typical kind of overweight, maybe kind of person. So it was kind of an odd diagnosis, but through diet and exercise and some oral medications, I was able to control it for a while. But then eventually, I wasn't able to control that. And I went to a dietitian to try to get some help, to try to see what I could do with my diet. And she asked immediately what kind of insulin I was on. And I wasn't on insulin. So soon after that, she kind of put me in touch with another doctor, an endocrinologist. And he, quickly diagnosed me as type 1, meaning that my body does not produce insulin at all, meaning that I would be, I'd have to produce my own insulin, or, I'd have to take shots or some other way, like an insulin pump, probably for the rest of my life. So it was kind of it's a normal thing. When I talk to other adults that are diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, they almost kind of go through a similar kind of thing. I don't know, Scott, is that kind of the way it went with you? Because you were, 21 when you were diagnosed?
Right. So I was diagnosed in November of my 20th year. So when would it have been? 1994? Somewhere in December of 94 and December 93. I'd have to look it up. So it's been 15, 16 years at this point. And I'm about 5'11". I like to say I'm 6 foot, but I'm 5'11". And, I went from about 180 pounds to about 140, 145.
Wow.
I mean, I was just hanging bones off of me, and I was peeing all the time. I was peeing constantly. And I could not believe how thirsty I was, but you know, you're a young person, so you just, what do? If you're thirsty, well, you get some Mountain Dew. And I was just two-fisted drinker. I would have 2-liter bottles of Mountain Dew in both hands and just walk around drinking Mountain Dew, figuring that I just get enough, you know, I was dehydrated from my point of view. And I drank an obscene amount of Mountain Dew and I basically turned gray. My body turned gray. And for the people who are listening who haven't quite got the context yet, there's two kinds of diabetes. There's type 1 and there's type 2. Type 1 diabetics produce no insulin and they are literally missing something. While type 2 diabetics are resistant to their own insulin effectively. They've basically, used the drug so much that they are resistant to it. And most people overseas think of this as a juvenile diabetes and an adult diabetes. And that sounds like what happened to you, that even your doctor here in the U.S. just assumed, well, you're almost 30, so you must be the old guy diabetes and not the young guy diabetes. But that seems to have changed.
Yeah. And actually, I had two different doctors at that time. The one that diagnosed me, and then we actually moved and I had a different doctor, and this new doctor, I was type 2, you know, it didn't even occur to him that I might not be type 2. So I had two, you know, normal primary care physicians that completely missed it.
And this is the struggle with diabetics, is that there's in the States, of course, there's a primary care physician who's really a general practitioner. And then there's the notion of an endocrinologist. And, you know, if you break a bone, you usually go to a specific kind of person to have that looked at. And if you have a heart attack, you go to a specific kind of person. But if you're feeling sick all the time and peeing all the time, you go to your regular doctor. And if they think they can fix it with a pill, they'll try to do that. And unfortunately, that for diabetics, we can spend years even. I spent a year and a half as a 20-year-old diagnosed as a type 2 diabetic, which didn't make any sense. I didn't have any of the symptoms, but that looked like type 2 diabetes. And I ended up taking pills for a while, just like you did. And it's tragic because the time that I wasted doing that was disappointing.
So initially your body is still working. It's still producing some insulin. And then over the course of, you know, whatever it is, I was probably the same way, a year, year and a half, something like that. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden it stops. And then it takes a long time to really get to the point where I guess you're not producing any. So, you know, right. You start out with having to use very little insulin. And then gradually you start to use more until you kind of level out.
Right. And because we don't produce any insulin, folks who are listening, we have to bring it in. We have to get that insulin in. So it sounds Gary's doctor was saying, I think that you have insulin in you. You're just not using it very well. So we'll give you pills that will make it work better. And then when you ran out, when your pancreas finally gave up the ghost, did they put you immediately on shots? And did you have to go and learn the whole?
I took Lantus, which is a long-acting insulin that generally covers like 12 to 24 hours, something like that. And then to cover my meals, I use an insulin pen. So just a little, it looks like a pen, a little needle with some insulin loaded in it. And then you dial up the amount of insulin for the number of carbs you're going to eat. So if I'm going to eat, I don't know, say 15 grams of carbs or something like that, that kind of equates to 1 unit of insulin. So I dial that up on the pen, get myself that one injection, and then away I went.
Mm-hmm. And that ratio that you just mentioned is so important. Diabetes is surprisingly about math, isn't it? I mean, you just find yourself doing all sorts of math in your head that you would never think about.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you're doing the multiple daily injections, there's a lot of math. Fortunately, you and I both use an insulin pump, which it does a lot of that thinking for us. One of the good things with the insulin pump is that you can set different ratios throughout the day. You'll find, I know I do, I'm not sure if you do, Scott, but throughout the day, I have to use different ratios, to cover my meals. So the pump helps a little bit with that. I don't know if you want to talk about the pump a little bit.
Well, I do. So you used needles for a while, and I did too. I spent 5 years, sticking myself. And initially, when they teach you this, they tell you to just do it a couple times a day, morning and night. And I realized pretty quickly, somewhere in the first 3 years, that as much as my doctor was a good person and appreciated their effort, they were not going to care about me 24 hours a day, and no one was going to take care of me except myself. And I think that most diabetics come to that realization.
Right. Absolutely.
So then I said, I got to get this figured out, and someone suggested a pump. How long till you got on a pump?
It was, I don't know, probably a year and a half or 2 years, I think. Not too long. One of the biggest things for me was when I was just giving myself injections, I kind of felt like, you know, okay, here's my meal, give myself an injection, and then I'm sort of not diabetic for a little while until I have to do it again. When I was trying to decide whether or not to go into the pump, I'm hooked to this thing 24/7. And so it took me a little bit to kind of get over that. It's like, you know, now it's like I'm always diabetic. So it's kind of a weird thing. Now, of course, after using it for a while, you realize, you know, at least for me, it's the way to go. And I can't imagine living without it, but it definitely was a big change for me.
Yeah. There's a psychological thing. I remember, I think I was 25. And the pump educator came in, and this is a registered nurse who's there to teach you how to use this pump. And the pump, I've got a video up that I'll put in the show notes that I show people how I plug my pump in. And it basically plugs into us, you know, I keep mine in for about 3 to 6 days, basically until I run out of insulin. And it pushes the insulin into you, so you don't have to stick yourself all the time. But, man, when she came and taught me how to use it, I broke down. I started crying because I just realized that I'm sitting here with an external organ that I can't afford to lose. It was very psychologically difficult.
Yep, absolutely. It's it's hanging off of you every day, all day. It's a big change, but I think it's a great tool that we get to use, and we're very fortunate that we have that at our disposal.
Mm-hmm. Now, were you physically fit when you became diabetic? Or when did you become it? I mean, how did you go from diabetic to triathlete? Because I find diabetes makes it difficult for me to exercise.
Yeah, it definitely is a challenge. I think growing up, I was always very athletic. Probably near the time I was diagnosed, I was not quite as athletic. I started actually getting back into it after I was diagnosed. So it's a way to help me. It helps use the insulin better. It's really hard. It's a real challenge. There's a lot of stuff that I have to deal with on a daily basis that other folks don't have to. But in the long run, the benefits definitely outweigh all of the trouble that it causes and all the challenges.
Mm-hmm. One of the metrics that I use that is like it's really become my primary metric 15 years into it now, is the total amount of insulin that I use in a single day. And that total amount, I feel like, tells me how I'm doing as a diabetic. And I started out using about 20 units of insulin a day total when I was very, very thin and very young 15 years ago. And then I used 30 units a day total. So that's complete usage of insulin every single day. And then in the last 2 or 3 years, it's gone up to 40 units a day. Do you think about things in that context, and has exercise changed that?
I was actually just trying to look at my pump to see what my numbers are. I don't know. I think
I'm talking about like in the larger macro scope. Like 5 years ago, did you use less or more? You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. I think I probably used a little bit less, but then again, I don't know. I think I'm still towards maybe the tail end of the honeymoon phase. So 5 years ago, I probably wasn't using very much at all. But I would think that since I've been exercising and running and doing triathlons, the amount of insulin that my daily amount has definitely gone down. And I think if we can limit that, I think it's a good thing.
And the honeymoon period that you just referred to, what is the honeymoon period?
It's just the amount of time from when, you know, your pancreas is producing your insulin and doing what it's supposed to do, that kind of tapers off over a period of time. And so over a period of time, you'll need less or more insulin from the pump or from a syringe to help make up for that deficiency.
Hey, it's Alternate Universe Scott Hanselman. Going to thank our sponsors for making this free show possible. We've been doing Hansel Minutes for almost 4 years now, and we really couldn't do it without Telerik. So I want to tell you about some of the stuff they're working on. If you've already started developing with Silverlight, then you probably need a solid testing tool to do your Silverlight UIs. Unfortunately, though, a lot of the tools available today only help you with unit testing. There's not really a good way to simulate the actual behavior of those end users, unless you spend days and weeks doing a lot of manual testing. But the guys at Telerik have got a new point-and-click UI testing tool for Silverlight called Web UI Test Studio. And the beauty is that you can quickly record your tests with a cross-browser recorder. You can enrich them with code if you've got really complex scenarios. And on top of that, it supports all the standard controls as well as the Telerik enhanced controls. You can verify not only Silverlight, but even complex AJAX applications. Best part, Web UI Test Studio lives in Visual Studio, so you don't have to leave your favorite development environment. You can check it out at telerik.com/web-testing-tools. And be sure to thank Telerik for supporting the show on their Facebook fan page at facebook.com/Telerik. The honeymoon period is really painful from a, it's really painful because it's almost like the universe is teasing you. I've seen a lot of people who have a child get, diagnosed with diabetes, and then they do everything right and they go to all their classes and then they take their insulin, and then one day they don't need insulin for maybe 3, 4, 5 days, or they start using tiny amounts of insulin and they think, we've beat it. We figured it out. And that's the honeymoon period where the body makes its last gasp of trying to fix it, and then it finally, the pancreas gives it up. So when we work out your insulin is used more effectively, and when you work out your blood sugar drops, I found that the number one thing that can lower my blood sugar is yard work. And I'll literally, if I'm going to have a low blood sugar, it'll be doing yard work. The thing that I struggle with when I'm exercising and with diabetes is that I sometimes end up eating more food than I would have ordinarily that day. So I didn't actually lose any weight. Like in a regular day, if I don't work out, I'm not going to have a power bar. But if I work out and I have a low blood sugar, there's no choice but to eat. And then when you do the math, and inevitably I end up giving myself more food than I would have. How can I work out and lose weight if I keep putting calories in myself?
Yeah, it's really tough. There are those days, like if I have a hard workout in the morning and I don't do kind of what I need to do, and I'll talk about that a little bit, some of the things I need to do to prevent the lows, I'll find myself throwing down 2-3 Pop-Tarts, you know, especially like on a Saturday, if I'm out, like you said, doing yard work or doing something like that, then I'm going to have some more. I mean, I'm eating a lot of calories to try to fix my lows. So it definitely is a challenge. Now, fortunately, I don't have that issue. I eat a lot of calories, but I also burn a lot of calories. So it's hard for me to talk to that. But, I definitely see how that's an issue with somebody. And I think the main thing is learning how to kind of control those lows and, identifying some of the things that will make you go low. Especially like you said, yard work. Let me talk about a little bit about like what I'll do for a normal day, when I go running. The one thing, the main thing, I guess, for a type 1 diabetic is paying attention to the amount of insulin they have on board. And so that's kind of the amount of insulin that's in your system. So if you, eat a big meal, give yourself 60 units of insulin, it's going to take anywhere 3 to 5, something like that, hours for that insulin to kind of go away. So what I have to be very careful about is, eating, giving myself a lot of insulin, and then going for a run. I just can't do that. It would cause a big problem for me. So I don't have the luxury. Like right now, I couldn't go out and go for a run, because if I did, my blood sugar would just tank. So I have to prepare. So normally what I do, especially for running, is 2 hours prior to a run, I will lower my basal amount. And I don't think we've talked about what basal is, but basal is the background insulin, that's given through the pump, throughout the day. So it's just a tiny amount of insulin all day long. And it's kind of to mimic sort of what your body would normally do. Mm-hmm. So with the pump, I have the luxury of being able to dial that back. So 2 hours before I run, I'll lower that by about 50%, maybe 40%. And then I'll go for my run. And that usually will prevent, I can go for an hour long run and not have to eat anything, during the run. And I'll be okay. Right before the run, I do eat about 20 or 30 carbs to kind of level things out. But for the most
part... Now, when he says 20 or 30 carbs, that's like a, you know, a granola bar. Right?
Yeah, or normally what I do is like a peanut butter crackers or something like that. Just something about 5-10 minutes before I go out for a run. I found if I eat it like right before my run, it just doesn't seem to do anything. If I wait too long, then my blood sugar will go high before I start. But about 5 or 10 minutes, I'll eat it, and that usually will cover me for an hour long run, and I'll be good to go. So that's kind of my morning. Afterwards, I don't really have to do anything special, but I really have to watch myself later on in the day. When my body is trying to recover, it's going to use up a lot of glucose, and I have to lower my basal again in the afternoon for 2 or 3 hours, or I will go low in the afternoon. So,
and this is because of the morning run. So you run at 7 a.m. and you're going to still be dealing with that at 3 p.m.
Absolutely. Yeah. From 8 a.m. till 2 or so, I'm fine. But after that, I'll start to go low. So this presents like a real challenge on the weekends. So if I have a super long run Sunday morning, if I get done at 8 and then I have to do, I'm going to do some yard work or something like that in the afternoon, I got a real challenge because my body's already going low. Now I'm going to do another activity that's going to cause me to go low. So those are the days where I have a box of Pop-Tarts.
Wow. Can you talk a little about what a low feels like to people?
A low.
Because it's one of the most difficult things to explain. I mean, my wife and I have been married 10 years. And I just, and when I'm just kind of lying on the ground staring at the ceiling, just wishing it would stop, she's really quite helpless. It's a low is really a horrible thing.
Right. Yeah. It's it's never, unfortunately, it's never the same thing, but, kind of a shaky feeling. I get to some point where I'm pretty low, fairly low, too low. I can't even think. I can't form sentences. I just can't do anything. Shaky. What are some of the other things? I guess those are the main things.
Sometimes I've described people, like, when your car is on E and you don't know if you're going to make it to the next gas station, and it feels like the car that you're driving is starting to pull the gas from, like, the really nasty bottom part of the gas tank, and it sputters. It's like the brain's version of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Just kind of, weak and dizzy and, I don't know, just everything. It really is awful. And it's one of the most annoying things. And one of the few times that I kind of, I really get upset and just discouraged and just, why now? Yeah. That kind of stuff.
And on the flip side, there's highs, and every diabetic is different, but, sometimes the family will say, let's go for Chinese. And I'll just say, I just can't do Chinese food today. Because Chinese food is like notoriously high in sugar, at least American Chinese food, and notoriously high in fat and notoriously high in carbs. And it's just between pizza and Chinese food, there's just really nothing. There's nothing good for a diabetic in those foods. And I'll end up having a high blood sugar. How high do you go in an average week? I mean, I'll hit 250 every week, if only for a couple of hours.
Yeah. I think I was following you on Twitter yesterday, and you were talking about a roller coaster, and I was riding it with you yesterday. I swam in the morning and had woke up with a blood glucose of 90, which is great.
Right. And the goal is 80 to 100, 120 for right. American milligrams per deciliter. That's the, for those who are overseas, there's different measurements like miles and kilometers, but we try to keep our blood sugar around 100.
Right. Right. So after my swim, I was at 100. Great. Now, one of the challenges I have with swimming is going really high afterwards, especially if I'll try to eat a snack afterwards or whatever. But I shot up to 340 after my swim.
Why?
So everything, well, I think it was a combination of the snack that I had afterwards. I felt like I was a little bit low, but I think I probably wasn't. Yeah. So I didn't give myself a very good bolus for that meal, and just
didn't give yourself any insulin.
So I totally underestimated that and shot way up.
For those who don't know what a bolus is,
I'm sorry. Yeah, it's explained. So we talked about basal a minute ago, and that is the little bit of insulin throughout the day And bolus is the other kind to, that we take the fast acting to cover meals that we eat. So I totally blew it. You know, didn't guess the right number of carbs or anything like that. And I shot up. So, and like you said, you know, I was able to fix that and I came down fast, but, the fluctuations are very frustrating and just kind of something that we have to deal with. I wish that I could have tighter control, but, there's a lot going on, with exercising and trying to do all the right things with eating and everything. And, it's a challenge to try to keep it in the right range.
It's depressing because when you're looking at, I always tell people that a low will kill you quick and a high will kill you slow.
Absolutely.
With a low, you're basically, your airplane is losing altitude and you're going to crash into the mountain. But with a low, it's like your balloon is floating away and you're all alone and you're flying through the sky and no one can help and you just have to bring that balloon down slowly. But when you're up there, it's just about the loneliest feeling think of.
Yeah, absolutely. My symptom when I'm high is, you know, kind of sluggish. I feel real achy and tired. And I play a little game. It's like, am I tired or am I high? Because a lot of times I can't tell the difference between the two.
Yeah, for me, I can almost taste the sugar. It feels like I'm marinating in my own sugar. Like I can taste it in my mouth. And I know that, and I'll ask my wife if my breath smells, because my breath will smell like candy, but I haven't eaten any candy. And it's just such a difficult thing to deal with. How can I start getting into working out to the level where you've actually done triathlons, right?
Yeah. I've done a few shorter ones. I'm going to do a half Ironman, this September, which is the 70 mile version, the 1.2 mile swim, 56 mile bike, and then a 13 mile run. I haven't committed to doing a full one yet, but I will at some point. You know, you gotta just make the commitment to do it. You gotta, you know, start off slow. Just so, you know, if you're gonna be running or whatever, you're gonna be starting off running just like anybody else. So you're gonna use the same kind of program. But the key really is watching the amount of insulin that you have on board and lowering your basals beforehand, doing, you know, testing before, testing right after. During my longer runs, I'll test during. Like when I ran the Chicago Marathon, my first one this past October, and I tested about every 5 miles. And about every 5 miles, I kind of find out, and I found this out through my training doing the exact same thing. About every 5 miles, I know if I'm going to go, you know, which way I'm going. And then about every 5 miles, I can eat something. Maybe at the next aid station, I'll take, you know, just water. If I think I'm going low, then I can take some Gatorade or whatever. But that amount of time, was enough that I can make a decision. And also, I also knew that in that amount of time, I wasn't going to dive down or go that direction. I knew kind of where I was. But the keys are, lowering your basal beforehand. You're gonna have to find out what works best for you. And then, during the exercise, you're going to have to test before, during, after, and then also, as I talked about just a little bit ago, you know, later on in the day, what happens. And the other thing, if you're just starting out, you're probably going to have more lows when you're just starting out a new exercise. But once your body gets used to that exercise, things will level out. So even now, I've been at this for, I don't know, going on 2-3 years. I've found that now I'm actually using a little bit, you know, I don't have to lower it quite as much as I did when I first started. So your body's just kind of getting used to it. So again, it's still a kind of, it's a different kind of honeymoon phase, but it still exists.
But I just want to make sure that people can kind of visualize this. You're running and you're checking your blood sugar while you run, or do you stop and then check your blood sugar?
I stop. I've got a little race belt, and I have the Lancing device. I have the Lancing device sort of like taped on the outside of this thing. And then I have an ultra mini, blood glucose monitor, with a couple of test strips and a Ziploc bag inside this little pouch. So as I'm running, I'll load up a test strip, wait till it's ready to go. Then I'll stop for a second, prick my finger, test. And then away I go. So it doesn't take too much time, but that's kind of the way I handle it.
Yeah. And so you're running, you're in your shorts, you've got a belt on with your lancet, your test strips, your blood sugar meter, and you're wearing your pump as well on a belt of some kind?
Yes.
With your tubing and everything as well.
Yes, absolutely. And then I also have a couple goo that I like to take. They're like energy gels. It's an energy gel. So it's a really fast-acting carbohydrate, essentially. I will never, ever leave the house without something like that on me running. It's just, you know, if you're type 1, this is a must. You cannot go out without some sort of carb on you. You know, if I test, if I'm running a little bit low, I don't like to let myself get too low if I'm out for a run. You know, maybe 120, 130, 140, something like that. If I know if I'm coming down, I'll go ahead and have a goo to try to prevent myself from going too much lower. I generally won't go back up, but if I don't eat, I definitely will go down. So I have all that stuff with me. And this is all with, you know, lowering my basal 2 hours before. The night before, whenever I go to bed, on my insulin pump, you can set a basal pattern. So I'll go ahead and set up my pump to say, okay, at 4:30 a.m., I need to start lowering it. So there's a lot of preparation that goes into this. This probably isn't the greatest advertisement for exercising. But as I said before, the benefits, you know, definitely outweigh all of the challenges that we have.
Yeah, it's funny though. There's so many things that are intuitive to a diabetic that sound scary to regular folks. I mean, the idea that you don't leave the house without carbohydrates, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I know, like, you know, the one time that I went to the Blockbuster Video to rent a movie without, that's the time I will have a low blood sugar, and I'll find myself sitting in the parking lot of a 7-Eleven, just kind of like half crawling in to get a power bar. Just,
right.
That's just the Murphy's Law of diabetes.
Right. Yeah. You know, it is kind of, you know, it's scary. You know, you're going out for a long run and you have to be careful or you will run into a serious problem. You know, it's very serious business, but it can be done. And, you know, I'm a big proponent of living life to, you know, the max. You know, I have this disease. It doesn't mean that I can't go run a marathon. It doesn't mean that I can't do other things. You know, it's just, you know, it's the hand that I've been dealt and I deal with it. You know, it's a royal pain in the butt, but you know, that's just the way it is. So I don't let it keep me down. And that's one of the big things that kind of keeps me going and doing this is that, you know, I've had parents of children with T1 that, you know, that say that I'm an inspiration and that just blows me away. I just can't even imagine that. But you know, when I'm out there just for a little run and I think, you know, I got to push through this. You know, this is kind of one of the reasons that I do this is to put it out there and be an inspiration for other folks that, you know, if you're diagnosed, that doesn't mean you just have to sit around and do nothing. There really are no limitations.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about planning. I mean, you're running marathons and triathlons and I'm traveling all the world, crossing time zones and you just do it. I mean, what else are you going to do? You could sit at home. I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. Now, let's say that I'll throw a question out to you, Scott. So you've got a big, a big presentation that you're going to have to get to give. Do you do anything different on those kind of days?
Yeah, actually I do. It's funny that you mentioned that. I mean, giving a big presentation is not exactly a half marathon, but like, let me give you some examples. I was, going to give be a small part of a keynote, you know, and you've got, you know, a couple of thousand people in person and then maybe 30,000-40,000 people watching online and then maybe a 500,000 that'll watch it later. It's not something you want to screw up. So non-diabetics the night before are like, all right, you know, this is great. We're going to be in this keynote. Let's all, like the whole team, let's all go and have steak. All right, let's go have steak and potatoes and we'll go to like Ruth's Chris Steakhouse and we'll just really like live it up and we'll all go to bed a little early. They'll all go to bed at 10 and they'll wake up the next morning. It'll be great. So they're going to celebrate the night before by eating.
Right.
And so then I say, you know, I'm going to go to Subway sandwiches. And I go, what's wrong with you? Why are you going to go to Subway sandwiches? I mean, it's like, well, tomorrow's important, right? It's the biggest day of the year. And I know how many units of insulin a steak and cheese sandwich is, whether it's a steak and cheese sandwich from Subway that I buy in Amsterdam or whether it's one I buy in Fargo, North Dakota. I mean, I hope this sounds familiar to you, and it's not just me that does this, Gary.
Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Especially on those bigger kind of things, you just don't want to take the risk. Yeah. I totally understand. Yeah,
I mean, definitely. I can't go and have some crazy, hey, let's try sushi the night before I don't know what that'll do to my blood sugar. And while you're going to be asleep at 10, I'm going to be up all night fighting with
right.
it. I mean,
right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Let's have a donut to celebrate, right? And if you look at a donut like a Krispy Kreme, not only is it horrible for you, but a donut at 9 o'clock, I'm going to be wrestling with my blood sugar probably till 2 or 3 in the afternoon for the pleasure of 30 seconds of a donut.
Absolutely.
So I just don't do that. And then people tease me. So I just lean into it, you know, to be honest with you. I just lean into it. I take that, you know, Hanselman flies to Egypt and goes to Subway kind of running joke. Uh-huh. And I just say, yeah, well, yeah, you know, of course I love Subway, you know. I mean, what else can you do other than joke about
right.
it? I mean, I would love to have different food. But unless I did all the math ahead of time, I just don't know how I could do it without
right,
risking
yeah.
the talk. Yeah, sometimes I'll even eat less. I mean, sometimes, you know, it's really a horrible thing to say, but sometimes it's just easier not to eat.
Yeah, you know, on days that I'm exercising, you know, if I'm now I'm training for triathlon, so I'll swim in the morning and bike in the afternoon. Dealing with the whole insulin board issue, you know, swimming in the morning's fine, but then if I'm going to bike around 12 or 1, I can't just have a big lunch at 11. I just kind of have to take it easy. I can't give myself too much insulin, or I'm going to have issues on the bike. So by the time I'm done, you know, biking at 1 or something like that, I just want to eat. I you know, it's just like, you know, okay. The pressure's off a little bit. Now I can eat. I don't have to worry about it so much. But yeah, you're right. Absolutely.
Well, and I think that's really where we can kind of leave the conversation. I think you nailed it right there. I mean, I would just like to eat just one day, whatever the heck I want to, without thinking about it for 6 hours afterwards.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Well, thanks a lot for coming on and talking to me about this. I mean, it's just nice to see people that can do marathons and can do triathlons, and it reminds me that I just need to get off my ass. And I thank you for that reminder. I really do.
All right. Thanks for having me, Scott. I appreciate it.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes. We'll see you again next week.